Thanks for checking out today's episode of The Experience Curve, where we explore the personal journeys of accomplished individuals, breaking down the steps they took to get where they are, which I hope just might inspire you on your own path forward. Today, I'm joined by Lucy Milligan Wall, the visionary founder of LMW Edits, a boutique professional organizing company based in San Francisco. What sets Lucy apart is her unique approach to organizing, born out of a desire to help her friends live more intentional and fulfilling lives. By recognizing the specific needs of urban dwellers and honing in on her target market, Lucy's built a thriving business that's not only transforming physical spaces, but also empowering individuals to reclaim control over their environment and their lives. In this episode, we'll explore Lucy's entrepreneurial journey from her humble beginnings to the pivotal moments that shaped her path. We'll explore how she navigated the challenges of starting her own business, the strategy she employed to find her niche, and the invaluable insight she's gained along the way. So whether you're a seasoned entrepreneur, an aspiring business owner, or someone who's simply curious about the power of organization in creating a life of purpose and clarity, get ready to be inspired, motivated, and equipped with actionable wisdom from this enlightening conversation with Lucy Milligan Wall. Hey, Lucy, thank you so much for taking the time.
Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
Typically where I start, you know, it's like the beginning, right? Like the moment where you realize, like, I want to like start my own business. Like, what were you doing? Where were you at in your career? What sort of circumstances led to this realization that you want to be your own boss?
Yeah, it was a very circuitous route and a very expensive one. So I don't recommend it to others. So my first career was in nonprofit fundraising, and I did that for about 2.5 years. I had this amazing manager. I was super into it. I was like, let me accelerate my career. I'm going to get an MBA. So I went to UCLA Anderson for my MBA program, full-time MBA for 2 years, had an amazing time, learned a lot. I would say that I was mind blown and behind for a lot of it, but it was a really great experience. And so I left the MBA program thinking, okay, I'm going to keep going with my fundraising career, maybe pivot into the arts, which has always been a passion of mine. And I quickly encountered that I was getting interviews for the same kind of job I'd had before, just you have to raise more dollars. And after like sort of a mind-bending educational experience, I was like, I don't want to go back to doing the same thing. Like, why did I do this if not to like accelerate, change? So that was the moment where it was like, well, now what? Fortunately, I had the example of a lot of my classmates who were starting businesses of all different kinds. And the thought process for me was, if the guy sitting next to me in class who was doing the same things that I was doing thinks he can start a technology company, I can surely start something. Like, it doesn't have to be a technology company, but I can do something. And then it was a process of, okay, let me talk to friends and family. What am I good at? What's resonating for me? What do I not have to go to more school for? Because already did that. And people kept coming back to me saying, like, you're really organized. You should make something about that. And then I was sort of putting the pieces together of like, yeah, I am. And that's probably why I was able to get through business school when I was not as prepared as my classmates, because my space was organized. My time was organized. I had a system for sort of metabolizing this entire experience. So that was sort of the inspiration.
Yeah. And I think it's on your website said you essentially like this idea bore out of like looking at your friends that you had and hey, like this is kind of like what, you know, we need. But you kind of like found a niche where I think is very interesting, right? Like you were seeing a lot of this organization based, you know, or targeted towards, you know, suburban families. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you decided to customize your services more to like urban, right, living and people that, you know, again, starting with people like your friends and your friend base and colleagues, I'm assuming, or ex-classmates. And how did you kind of come to that realization that like this is not, or maybe we're focusing too much on the suburban household?
Yeah, I mean, I was looking at what was out there at the time. So this is back in like 20, like the idea starts bubbling up in like 2011, 2012. Marie Kondo's book hadn't come out yet. There weren't all these TV shows yet. So a lot of the organizing content out there was really like very traditional, like for like a stay-at-home mom in the suburbs in a bigger house with a garage, with a pantry, all that stuff. And I was like, this is not my life. And this is not the life that any of my friends are living. But you still need to be organized. And so I thought, you know, this is going to be what I want to do is make this real for people who are busy, who live in small spaces, who maybe like are dealing with the fact that they don't live in the space they thought they would be living in. And as I started to build my business, I did realize that that was a thing that, especially in San Francisco, this is a city of transplants. Lots of people come here from all over the country and they sometimes have this subconscious idea in mind that, okay, this is what my life is going to look like. And by a certain age, I'm going to have that house in the suburbs. And then they're that age and they're in a condo in San Francisco. And they're like, what do you mean I don't have a garage? What do you mean I don't have a pantry? I can't do this. And so it's really rewarding to come in and say like, all right, we can make you a really great system in whatever space you have. You just kind of have to let go a little bit of like the idea that like this thing goes in the attic and this thing goes in the basement because you don't have an attic or a basement.
Got it. Yeah. Yeah. San Francisco, it's what is it? Less than a million people, right?
So yeah, 800,000.
Bigger
yeah.
city. Okay. So yeah, so it's a bigger city, but you know, people think, okay, this is like so much, but it is very compact of a city, right? So they do fit a lot into the city as a sort of a, you know, right?
It's compact. It's 7 by 7 miles and the housing stock is very old and weird. So that helps.
Yes. They have those pretty bay windows. I do like, you know, I think San Francisco, you kind of go down the streets and no two, like here in LA, a lot of the houses is like, all right, 70s stucco, tan, right? But San Francisco, like you see like a blue house, pink house, you know, such character, you know, to the architecture. So I think it kind of makes it not feel so monotonous. So, you know, for whatever that's worth. But so then your next step from there is like, okay, I have the idea. I know where I want to focus, but were you like, I'm just going to dive in. I know some friends that I'm going to start working with, or was it more, I'm going to start advertising my.
So I basically just started talking about the idea to anyone who would listen. And I do recommend that because it does two things. Number one, it helps you understand what about your idea is or is not connecting with people. So the questions that people ask you and when they look confused, that sort of gives you an idea of like, okay, I'm not expressing myself clearly, or maybe this idea is a little bit off base. So that was helpful. And then number two, it gives you accountability. So if I talk to this friend of my dad's that I meet about like how I'm going to start this business, and then the next time I see him, he's going to ask me, hey, how's your business going? So it sort of like gives you that thing of like, okay, this is real. I don't just have ideas in my head. This is actually going to happen. The way I got my first client is actually a pretty interesting story. So I was doing that. I was talking about this idea to anyone who would listen, and I was on a trip. And talking about, you know, what do you do? Oh, well, I'm going to start this business. And this woman, after a few days of the trip, she said, I really like your idea. I really need you. When we get home, call me and I'll be your first client. And she was.
Wow. So that was it. So this was just on a random trip and you just happened to pick
this
up?
This is a random trip. Okay. Just talking to whoever. Yeah.
So did you find that in the beginning, like word of mouth and sort of like that method?
Yeah. And in fact, to this day, more than half of my clients are word of mouth based. It's a referral based business because it's so personal, because I go into people's homes. And so you have to have that trust. And so referrals are always the best for me.
Yeah. Yeah. For a lot of industries that you work with is very much referral based. And I think when you can get people that, again, know, like, and trust you, it's going to speak more than any ad you take out on, you know, Instagram or something like that. Yeah. Right. So you do this first client, right? And then you start building from there, but what are you fully into? Like, okay, I did my first one, but were there obstacles sort of, because each space is going to be different. You know, you go into this house, it's sort of like this, and this house is that. How did you sort of overcome, or if you face any obstacles, like building this, how did you overcome those obstacles in building? Okay, got my first one down. Now what?
Oh, yeah. I mean, every client was scary because every client had different needs. And through the process of learning what worked for each client, I really realized that the way I want to run my business is very custom and tailored to each client. So I don't have like a system that I'm putting people into. There are a lot of businesses like that work really well. And some people are really drawn to that. That's great. For me, it's all about getting to know the client, asking a lot of questions and figuring out what they even don't really realize about their space and their lifestyle that I can sort of work with and design a system around. But it took a lot of clients, a lot of reps, a lot of changing how I did things. I tried different approaches. I tried different pricing. I tried different types of organizing sessions. I tried different ways of marketing it. Like I mean, so many iterations. And I think something that I heard someone say or read around the time I was starting my business that really stuck with me is like, don't be afraid to just do something. And it doesn't have to be perfect. Like, don't spend months on your website. Don't try to make sure that every blog post is perfect. Just put something out there. You can always iterate. And I really took that to heart. And so I'm not precious about it. If something's not working, I'll cut it off. If something's working, I'll keep pushing it.
That's actually great. You know, that's amazing. Because I think a lot of people will, that, like you said, they'll sit there and they'll go on and on and on about the perfect newsletter or the perfect, what, you know, whatever branding yes. component. And it's like, you have to just get out there and get the reps. And that's a great, you know, term you use, you know, yes. getting the reps down. So like the more you get the reps, you know, you become more comfortable, you become more confident at what you're doing. So when you figure out like pricing in with your clients, how does that structure work for, is it a square footage thing? Is it number of rooms? Is it, or like you said, it's obviously there's no set, you know, path of how you do things. So do you sort of figure it out on the job based on like a consultation?
Yeah. So I always start with a consultation. It takes about a half hour, 45 minutes. And I have a pretty set structure for that of the questions I ask the client. I ask them to give me a tour. I sort of explain how I work. But when I'm doing hands-on work, I've really come back to it's just an hourly rate. Because every space is different and how fast we can move through a space and get it organized depends on how much stuff is there, what that stuff is, and then how fast the client can make decisions. And I don't like to rush people. I don't think you make good decisions that way. And my goal is to not have to come back. I don't want clients to become dependent on me. I don't want them to think that I'm the one fixing the problem. I see myself a facilitator, and I just have a lot more data than they do. So I can share with them the data that I have and ask the right questions to point them in the right direction, but they're ultimately making the decisions and the system is supposed to be something that they can maintain going forward. So yeah, so because of that, the hourly is just, it works way better. And you know, I have general estimates. Like if we're gonna declutter a room, I estimate between 4 and 8 hours because I get really granular. I mean, we're looking at every paperclip, every sock, every fork, like everything. But that's, again, that's general. I've had clients where like we can do their closet in 3.5 and we're done. And I've had clients where like, you know, we're 12 hours deep and their kitchen isn't fully decluttered, but we're making progress. So it depends is always the answer.
Absolutely. And then when you're sort of starting out and not to get, you know, personal about your, you know, where you are, but did you kind of take your neighborhood as like, okay, I'm going to do this? Or was it like anywhere in the San Francisco metro area, the city, or?
I took any job, honestly, yeah. Like, because I didn't really have my niche at the beginning. Like I had my inspiration and I had my opinions about the organizing content that existed at the time, but I hadn't played it out in practice. And quite frankly, I was not in a position to be a choosy beggar. So I took anything, and that included working for other organizers. So it's really common in the industry to contract with other organizers. A lot of organizers won't hire employees, but they will hire other organizers as contractors. I don't do that. I have one employee who's an organizer and she and I do every job, but a lot of other organizers do it that way. And so I was able to contract with others. And that was really valuable because that gave me a really wide range of types of jobs. So between the jobs I got and the jobs I contracted on, I was able to sort of refine down like, okay, this part is fun. This part is not so fun. What am I going to do?
Right. Yeah. And then, well, speaking of like the person that you have working for you, some people will measure success or, you know, indicators or milestones that they hit to show that, okay, look, what I'm doing is paying off. It's not just an idea. It's a business now. Right. So for you, what was that sort of measure of success that, you know, hey, look, I'm on the right path. Maybe it was bringing on that employee, you know, whatever it might be, where you start to feel like, okay, I know this is for me and I made the right choice.
I would say it was a few years in when the bank account kept going up. That was when I was like, okay, we're here, because I'd run the numbers and like, okay, this should technically be profitable. But when like I would log into my bookkeeping software and it just keeps going up, that it was like, oh, okay, this is a real business. And when you get from your like 3-figure bank account to your 4-figure bank account to your 5-figure bank account, then you're like, okay, this is like a real adult business. So that early indication was like, okay, I have something here.
Yeah. I mean, San Francisco is not cheap either, as we know.
Right.
keeping the money flowing, right? So going into sort of like the maybe I kind of touched on it in the beginning, the sort of the organization of like physical space translating into like mental clarity, right? How do you feel like for people that come to you, is a lot of it that they realize, again, sort of like I said in the beginning, that mentally they start to feel better about things, not just the space that maybe they need to work from home or their kids to we are messy, whatever it might be. But did they ever get that mental kind of clarity from your work?
They do. And I think it is the reverse. People will come to me being like, my space is crazy, help. And then as we go through the process and get done, this happens every time. And I love it every time. The click will happen. And they're like, oh, this is going to make my life great. Because I think we don't really understand the connection necessarily, especially if you didn't grow up like in an environment that was particularly organized, which a lot of us didn't. I was fortunate. My dad was super organized. I mean, still is. And he sort of taught me all the skills I know to the extent that I didn't know that wasn't normal. Like, I just thought like everybody's dad makes them make their bed in the morning and fold up their towel in the bathroom when they're done and like make sure that their toys are put away at the end of every single day. Like, I just thought that was normal. So it's a little bit of like sharing with people what's possible if they haven't been exposed to these ways of living before, because I think a lot of times organizing tasks and daily tidying tasks can feel very onerous if people have not done them before, if you're not used to that pattern. But what I know is that if you do those little things, then you don't have to do the big things, which are actually much more stressful and taxing. So it's sort of like recalibrating and helping people understand the trade-off of like, if I do a little bit here, I don't have to do a lot over here.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense. You know, and I saw that you'll also offer in person, right? But then you also do virtual. Now, I would imagine virtual during 2020 was extremely helpful. I don't know. Yes. That's where it sort of like was born out of.
Sure was.
Oh, was it? Okay. So,
yeah.
And then, you know, I think some people still work from home a couple of days a week. Some people work full time from home, right? So there is that virtual thing that's look at us right now. You know, we're not here sitting together in person. So like, what would you say like the advantages and disadvantages are of each approach? Like, or maybe like how you determine like the best method depending on that client, you know, besides like, oh, I'm in, you know, I'm in Chicago and I need your help. Right.
Yeah. No, virtual organizing for me was definitely born out of the pandemic. People were doing it before. And I always thought, no, I'll never do this. In person is the way for me. And then March 2020 happened. And it was like, well, if I want to continue to have a business, I better be able to pivot. So that is what I spent the sort of lockdown phase of the pandemic doing. It was really challenging. I had quite a few clients who were like, no, please come in person. And I was like, it's May 2020. I'm not coming in person. I know some people will, and that's great for them. But for me, no. So, yeah. But the way that I like to describe the difference between virtual and in person is like, what are your priorities? So if your priority is getting it done fast, you're going to want in person, because having us there really accelerates the process, because we know the questions to ask. We know the places things need to go. We have our backlog of like previous projects that we can draw on. So it really gets rolling fast. If your priority is something like saving money, virtual is a really great way to go, because I charge the same hourly rate, but we're meeting for half an hour on Zoom. We don't have 4-hour appointments. So it's just a lot more, you know, price efficient. I also think it's great for people who are a little more private. So when I'm working in person, I'm really up in your stuff, like not in a, you know, intrusive way, but like we have to get into the nitty gritty. And so I'm physically in your space. I see a lot of your stuff. You're going to tell me a lot of stories that end up being pretty personal in order to explain the logic of all this stuff. And for some people, that's comfortable and great and they love it. And for some people, it's like, no, I can't do that. Like I need to really control what you see. And so virtual is really good for that, because I can only see what's on camera, and the rest is, you know, up to you. And then also, like, sometimes people just don't want to spend that much time. And so those shorter appointments for virtual can be good. It's more of like an accountability and a strategy relationship rather than a functional getting the work done relationship.
Got it. Yeah. I always imagine more people that are, you know, private, like you said, or they just have mm-hmm. things that, you know, it makes a lot of sense to have that virtual option that you've kept going, right? Since
yeah,
the pandemic,
right?
So
Yeah, I have two virtual clients right now.
Oh, okay. There you go. And what about people who maybe have, I don't want to use the term hoarders, but people who may have trouble letting things go, letting go of possessions, right? It does seem like a good deal of your work can get into sort of a psychology base, right? Like you're trying to talk with people about, you know, is there a component where you're trying to have people just get rid of stuff, or is it just finding places for it within their space?
So what I have learned is that everyone, including myself, has too much stuff. I've worked in literally any size of property you can imagine. Like I've worked in like a tiny one-room studio, currently doing a project on a big property that's got multiple ADUs on the property in addition to a main beautiful house, like any size. And I am telling you, everyone will say to me, the problem is that I don't have enough storage. And so after 10 years of this, I'm like, I don't think there's enough storage in the world for people to fill up, you know? So what that says is we all have too much stuff. So now when I talk to a potential client, I say, we're going to start by decluttering every project, no matter what. I don't make the decluttering decisions. The client always makes the decisions, and I don't push them. I simply ask them the questions. Do you use this? What do you use it for? Where do you use it? Do you have a substitute? How many do you have? Is this something you used to use, you no longer use? Really getting down to what they really need and love to have in their lives, which is a different amount for everybody, but it's always less than you have right now. And the reason I do that is because it's really hard to organize when people don't know what stuff is. Because if you don't know what it is and why you have it, I sure don't. And then we have the inventory, and now we can organize the inventory. So yeah, I would say 50 to 70% of the work is decluttering on every project. And once we do that, we're like already like most of the way there. Then it's just like labels and containers and fun stuff.
Right. No, that makes total sense. I mean, but do you ever have people that are like, you're like, no, I'm not getting rid of this. I'm not getting rid of this. And you're like,
yeah,
no, you kind of have to.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's all about trade-offs. So a part of my consultation process is really getting clear with the client on what their goal is. What do they want this space to be able to do for them? How do they want to feel in the space? And so we keep going back to that goal. And it's like, no, I can't get rid of that. I can't get rid of that. I can't get rid of that. I'm like, well, okay, but we're going to have to give somewhere else in order to get you this goal. Because if what you want is a kitchen with nothing on the countertops, everything's got to fit in the cabinets. And I have been in the position many times of saying, I cannot bend space and time for you. It's not in my skill set. So if you want this goal, we're going to have to make some tough decisions. And you know, I'm pretty frank with clients about that, of course, in a gentle way. And sometimes the client isn't ready. And I've had that happen. And we have that tough discussion. And they say, you know what? I can't do it right now. And I'm like, okay, that's totally fine. I'm not here to push you past your comfort zone. I'm here to help you get the results that you want. Because of that, my number one criteria for a successful project is that the client is willing to change. Not that they're willing to overhaul, not that they're willing to go crazy, but that they're willing to consider the possibility of doing things differently than they have been doing them. If we have that, we can make magic happen.
Right. Yeah. And I think a lot of people, it's probably, you know, like you said, how you grew up, you know, that it's just habits that they maybe picked up from their family, their parents, their, you know, whoever their grandparents, whoever they grew up with. And they kind of carry these into their adult life. And, you know, I think we're all guilty of, okay, like you said, even you have, right, some things to your house that you're like, all right, you know.
I'm literally doing a closet clean out this weekend. I'm so excited.
Oh, that's
it's
great.
Happening.
Yeah. Do people ever ask you like, hey, like, do you ever do like a before and after, like throughout, do you kind of document the progress, the process of?
You know, my social media manager wishes I did.
Yeah. We'll get into branding because I'm curious about that.
Yeah. Part of it, the reason I don't is because I just dive in. Like people are always a little funny when I come for the first session, like, oh, what do we do to start? I'm like, I'm diving in, like open the drawer, get the stuff out. Let's go.
Yeah.
And part of it is that I have pretty private clients. Like my clients don't really want to see a lot of pictures. It doesn't
Instagram
feel good
live
to
here
them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, like I am not ultimately selling a picture. There are organizers who are selling a picture. Great. my afters look good. They don't look like the home edit because the structure that I'm putting in place is for that particular client, for their particular needs. And as I was saying to some designers I was talking to recently, most of what I do is behind a cabinet door, inside a closet, behind a bathroom door. So you're not looking at it all the time. So what color it is and what font the labels are in is not really material. But on Instagram, everybody wants to see rainbows and they want to see like different textures and they want to see like cursive. And that's just kind of not what I do. But the functionality of what I do is what makes the difference. And so that's why I do a lot of talking about like the psychological process and the feelings that people have after the work is done, because it matters so much more than the picture.
Yeah. And again, going back to the clients, you know, especially private people, last thing they want is, you know, hey, here's my, you know, cat. Exactly. I've seen your website, you know, and it is, it's like, if you can have something that's just functional, right. And people want to just, hey, like take care of this for me. And it's functional. It doesn't have to be flashy, but it needs to be functional.
Yep.
That's what you need. But going into branding, that was my next question. Right. So I think your site looks really cool. You know, LMW edits. Yeah. And you know, when you're getting started, you're probably thinking word of mouth, you know, and friends and get business and business. And like you said, the three figures in the account and how do we grow that? You may not be so much into the branding at that point, but as you grow and grow, the personal brand does come out, right? It has to at some point, I'm assuming for most businesses in this 2024. So like your website, your graphics, I see you have eBooks, you have guides, you know. How does that all come together on your end? Is that you sitting down with someone helping you out? I know you said you have a social media manager. How about when it comes to like, again, the website, your logo, eBooks, guides, things like that? How do you kind of put them together?
So I'm very fortunate that my sister was trained as a graphic designer. She is now a tech CEO. But at the time I was starting the business, she was still a graphic designer, and she did put together just the template of my website for me, you know, sort of, and the homepage of my website is my organizing philosophy, and it's a series of statements that start with "I believe," and that's where we started. And those statements have changed a little bit since 2014, but not a lot. And that's sort of like the essence of what I'm doing. And so for me, my brand comes back to accessibility and inspiration. So like you want to shoot for something, but you want to feel like you can. And so for me, it comes back to who I am as a person. I like to think of myself as decently relatable, although like I have a very organized home. And for example, my brand colors are all pink because as you can see behind me, I really like pink. I'm wearing pink. Like that's me. I'm sort of unapologetically me. And the voice that I try to take is sort of like, imagine your dad's cool younger sister, like kind of your cool aunt. Like that's me. And I am an aunt and I'm not a mom. So it's very like, that's my voice. It's very authentic to me. And so I try to keep it like clean to the point, attractive, but not excessively manicured. That's kind of my vibe. And my logo is literally just my company name in a font made into a JPEG. That's it.
But it looks good. I mean, I think you're just like, no, it's very approachable. I think it's just a welcoming kind of feeling you get when you go to your site. So whatever you've been doing to update since the initial,
it's all me. I've done it all. Yeah, my social media manager started about a year and a half ago with me, and anything up till then I did myself. And you can really tell the drop off. Because the things that she designed are a little different than the things that I designed. But, you know, it got me there. You know, you DIY for a while until you can afford and need the help.
Exactly. No, it looks great. But how about like, you know, we talked about San Francisco, living in San Francisco. When you started this, doing it now, over the years, the evolution, you know, how important is that environment to you and your creativity? Like, you know, some people say you feed off the energy of the city. Is there anything there with that between you and San Francisco?
100%. I have a very different perspective on organizing than even other Bay Area organizers that live outside the city. And also worth noting is because, I went to college, I went to business school, a lot of my friends are in the tech industry. And so the language of tech and sort of that environment is all around me. So I was one of the first organizers to really use a lot of technology to automate in my business. And I even presented at our conference last year about how to do that. And it makes me want to meet my clients where they are. And I have to use technology to do that. Like a my clients are not going to pick up the phone and call me. They don't have time for that. That's why you can book a consultation with me directly on my website, because people want to go Google best professional organizer in San Francisco. I'm on page one. Okay, great. Click, contact, book. That's what they want. And so I meet them where they are. And I think if I didn't live in San Francisco, I wouldn't be as comfortable with that or speak that language. And that's something my clients really value, that when they talk about like their work from home schedule, or that they need to be on calls, or that they need their background of their Zoom a certain way or whatever, I understand what they need and they don't have to explain it to me. And I think they really appreciate that.
Yeah. I think having, you know, that world of tech and being accessible, you know, the virtual stuff, all those things sort of play into that, you know, that area of people, the Silicon Valley, right? That having those people around you and, you know, again, when you started your business, you know, it's you were tailoring it sort of towards these people. So coming 10 years later, right? So advice you would give to someone, you know, say someone, it doesn't have to be organization. It could be any sort of business, you know, people listening that are like, you know, I have a job, but you know, not really sure this is for me. Like advice you would offer them, again, like starting out from like three figures in the bank account, right? And now seeing it grow, what kind of advice would you give that person?
I would say that being an entrepreneur is not for everyone. And I would not have thought that it would be for me. I've enjoyed it, but it's difficult. And I think that anyone who's telling you that be your own boss is the solution to everything is selling you a bridge in Arizona over an ocean. Like, it's just, it's not the be all end all. There's trade-offs. There's always trade-offs. I mean, I've grown to love it. It allows my schedule to be really flexible, which I personally value because I married, my husband's job is in high-end hospitality and he travels the world. And so I can go with him because I can schedule client appointments, you know, in between, and I can be flexible that way. And I can check my email and do back-end work from anywhere in the world. So I'm not really a digital nomad, but like I can have that aspect, which is really nice. And if I had a corporate job, that would not work. So that's an asset. But also like the daily just stress of where is the next client coming from? I don't think that ever leaves you. And realizing that when something messes up, it's your fault. And when something didn't get done, it's your fault. You know, like you have to be really honest with yourself about your capacity to self-manage and to really push yourself. And I will admit, this has been a major growth area for me over the past 10 years. I mean, I was always kind of a procrastinator and then get it done at the last minute kind of person. And when your name is on the work that you do, that does not fly anymore. You have to be more thoughtful and do deeper level work. So I would say that I find it good for my lifestyle and I find it extremely fulfilling, but there's also downsides and a lot of a different kind of stress that you don't get when you work for somebody else.
Yeah. Sometimes when you work at a, it's like you said, here's your tasks or whatever for the week or the day. And you get them done. When you get them done, as long as you hit the deadlines, it could take you an hour, it could take you 4 hours, whatever it might be. But at the end of the day, you're not worried about the bottom line or, you know, when's the next whatever coming because you're on salary. But again, getting to travel the world, you know, definitely sounds like a very a cool trade-off.
Doesn't suck.
That's cool. So do you feel that being able to have your own business and as it grows and grows, do you feel like you get more time to yourself? Or is it because it's so much like you might have four people call you in one day and you're like, okay, I guess I'm going to be busy for the next month, more so than when I thought I could go on this trip with your husband. Is there a little bit of that in there? Or are you able to sort of plan out because you have enough help at this point?
I can plan decently well. It is always a little bit feast or famine. Like I don't know how to reach that like nirvana where like you just have a steady stream of clients. I'm not there yet. It's either like, uh-oh, I got to go pound the pavement, or like, oh, we got too much work. So hopefully I'll find that medium at some point.
No. It's definitely the trade-off that you get, you know, and when you're able to sort of like, okay, I have a flow going, that's great. But then, like you said, all of a sudden, some things could be, all right, it's kind of slow this month. And then the next month, it's like, I need a break. But you have to kind of take the work when it comes.
You do. I mean, that is the part about being in a service business that I also think people don't really understand when they go into it. And I see this a lot in organizing, actually. People get into organizing because they love to organize. If what you love to do is organize, that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be a good provider of organizing service, because you're working for a client. And ultimately, what I realized very early on is, if the client is happy, you have to be happy. There were so many jobs early on where the client would be like, oh my God, this is amazing. Great. Thank you. See you later. And I was like, what do you mean? We're not done yet. Yeah. But the client was done. So you have to be okay with that. So it really becomes more about enjoying the process of providing the service and less being like, I know the right way to do things. Let me do them for you.
Right. No, that makes total sense, because, you know, it's not a one size fits all career that you have at this point, right? So
no.
But how about when you think of about the future? You know, where do you see, you know, maybe we say we're not at that nirvana stage yet, but what are your dreams and goals, right, in this business as an entrepreneur?
Yeah, so I've had different dreams and goals over the course of the business. I think when I first started out, I just wanted it to be me. And then I quickly realized that it would be nice to have some help and not have to do some of the things that I'm really bad at, such as social media in my business. And so then I sort of started thinking, ooh, how big could I get? Could I have a huge team? And I've kind of come to a place where I've seen all the types of organizing businesses that are out there. I met lots of other organizers. And I think that kind of where I'm at, or maybe a tiny bit bigger, is where I want to be, because I'm in a nice sweet spot where I've got an organizer. So two of us can work at the same time on a client job and really make a lot happen in a day. But we're not coming in with a team that makes the client feel like, oh my God, there's this whirlwind going on and I can't keep track of it all. So for the type of service that I want to do, the size of my business is pretty comfortable. And the places that I want to grow are sort of in my personal branding, in speaking, in teaching, in that kind of stuff. Because we mentioned earlier how this is sort of a psychological business. And I do a lot of like reading and thinking about like behavioral economics, behavioral psychology, and how that plays into how we live and how we think about our stuff. And there's so much there that I love to talk about and think about and share with other people. And so that's kind of where I want to go.
And would that be sort of like where you're sort of like, again, speaking is a huge thing for branding. And I think when people can kind of get in front of others, word of mouth, great, but getting in front of a room full of strangers, you know, because I think the fact that now, not that it's a good thing, but since 2020 did force you to go to the virtual offering, now you can just be like, hey, I'm going to go to a show in whatever, New York City or something. And you could pick up clients there because you offer these virtual services.
Yeah, it's true. And that has been a really nice thing about being on podcasts such as this as well, being able to talk to people all over and say, hey, if you want to get in touch, I can help you. But for me, I think what I want to share more than selling my services is like sharing these ideas and ways of thinking, because there's so many like calcified customs when it comes to how we live in our homes and how we organize our homes and how we deal with household tasks. A lot of them are sort of needlessly gendered. A lot of them are needlessly antiquated. And I really want people to start thinking in new ways about how we can make our home environment something that is a secret weapon that supports us rather than a source of stress in our everyday lives. And so the sharing of the ideas is sort of the most important thing to me. And if I get a client, great, but like, that's like different to me.
Yeah. Just kind of helping others. And like you said, sharing the ideas, not worrying about, hey, picking up, you know, most people would say, oh, I just want to go and pick up clients, but you know, you're trying to like give back.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
So for people who are listening now, where's the best way to find you? Is it your website?
Yeah, my website has everything. And then I am on all the socials as at LMW Edits. We're most active on Instagram and YouTube, a little bit of Threads, just started a TikTok. We have all that. Thanks to my lovely social media manager, Shonda, who's amazing.
Oh, cool. Well, I mean, look, I really appreciate you talking today, Lucy, and, you know, explaining that business. It sounds like you've come a long way in such a short time. You have a lot of energy. You know, you're very, you know, intelligent. And I think that, you know, people can kind of gain a lot from. So I hope you do get out there and start, you know, sharing that message with people, because I think there's a lot to come from you that people can gain. So thank you so much for your time today. And, you know, everyone check out, you know, Lucy at lmwedits.com. And I'll make sure all the links are in the description.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me. Great conversation.
Take care, Lucy.
You too.
Thank you for taking the time to listen to this episode of Experience Curve. Please take the time to share this podcast with a friend or colleague to help get the word out about my show.